This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. If you happen to come from the boyhood town of Mark Twain, then inevitably your own story would be entwined with literary mythology. Every year, Hannibal, Missouri celebrates National Tom Sawyer Days. Been a tradition for more than 60 years. The rest of the year, the legacy of Mark Twain is kept alive in historic events and plaques that dot the landscape. Melissa Scholes Young is from Hannibal, Missouri. And so, too, is the heroine of her debut novel, Flood. And like her protagonist, Melissa also left Missouri to pursue adventure and to pursue a better understanding of stories that we tell ourselves about where we're from. Melissa is a professor in the college writing program in the Department of Literature at American University in Washington, D.C. She's going to read from her book in Asheville on Thursday at Malaprop's bookstore, but joins us now in the studio. Melissa, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me, Frank.
Tell us more about how this book came about.
So it started as a short story between Laura and Rose, and I wanted to write a female Tom and Huck story. I wanted to explore that friendship that I had grown up knowing so well, roaming the streets of Hannibal, but explore it through a female lens. So it started as a short story, and then in my research, I learned about the Mississippi River actually running backwards. And once I read that piece of history, I understood that the threads really could go together.
But tell us about growing up in Hannibal and how much Mark Twain, the imagination of imagining Mark Twain plays a part in the average Hannibalian.
It is all around us. Yeah. We walk the same streets where Mark Twain, where his boyhood home is, see the exact same fence that shows up in Tom Sawyer, and more importantly, the river. The Mississippi River is ever present. It is what you see out of every window. It's what you watch all the time, waiting to see what floods are going to bring. So sort of the stories are around you all the time. But I was interested in the difference between the stories and the research, the history.
Well, and the idea of sort of Becky Thatcher and what her story might have been if she were to return.
And that's really floods the story I think Mark Twain would have written if Becky Thatcher had gone home for that high school reunion. Back to Hannibal and found Tom Sawyer again.
What is it about growing up there, too? I would imagine on the one hand, it's all around you. On the other hand, I grew up living near Niagara Falls, and to me, that was no big deal. It was like, well, that's a waterfall until I saw what other people were calling waterfalls and said, oh, this is a big deal. And I just wonder if leaving and coming back gave you a different perspective on what life in Hannibal is.
It's a great place to be from. Yeah. And I think Mark Twain was right when he said your childhood home, it doesn't actually shrink. It's just that you are seeing it for the first time, that your perspective shifts. So I think there's something to be said for leaving in order to see it more clearly.
Tell us about this revelation for you when you realized that the Mississippi had at one time run backwards, run in the opposite direction. What that meant for you and why that was so compelling to you?
It was very surprising to find out that the mythology that I had grown up with was actually true, that in 1812, because of a series of earthquakes on the New Madrid fault line, it actually caused the Mississippi to run backwards for a few hours, and it was terrifying. But what happened, of course, as with every flood, is the river recalibrates. So I was very interested in the story of Laura Brooks recalibrating, of going in the wrong direction in order to be able to start over again. But also floods really destroy everything. But they also, they turn up all the good stuff too. They make the land more fertile afterwards. So it's complicated with water.
Tell us more about your protagonist, Laura Brooks.
So Laura Brooks has left Hannibal in 93 and she's come home a decade later. And life did not quite turn out as she had planned for it to be. She's a first-generation college student. She goes to nursing school, and her path takes a different turn, and so she decides to go home for a while. She's not sure how long she's going to stay when she arrives, and no one else is either. And she expects a pretty warm welcome, and it turns out that people's lives have moved on.
Well, as you suggest, Hannibal is a good place to be from. When you say that, and she's a first-generation college student, she'd made it. She got out. She got herself a job. She was a nurse, and she went through school. And then to come back, and that's, I think, part of what we examine in her life, was the pain of coming back to a place like that after, at least in somebody's mind, you made it.
And I think at the beginning of the story, she sees it that way, too, that she has gotten out. What she learns through the story is that the people who choose to stay, it's not that they don't have other opportunities, it's that they choose to invest in their community. Mm. And they really choose to spend their their futures there, and that it's not quite the choices of should I stay or should I go are a bit stark.
Mm-hmm. Will you read for us?
Sure. I'm going to read to you from the beginning. This is chapter one, running backward. Nothing could hold back the Mississippi that summer. Our flood stage was 16 feet, and when the river crested at 30, folks panicked with good reason. Jackson's Island, which jutted out of the river as an overgrown sandbar, was completely submerged. The island, immortalized by Mark Twain, wasn't very big to begin with, though Huckleberry Finn and Jim found it to be plenty. The annual spring rains usually caused minor flooding, but the trees on the island reached up from the river like bushes floating on the muddy surface. Water was what people talked about, worried over, and watched. Upstream and downstream, levees busted by force and sabotage. Barges were stuck for months, and the trains stopped running. On land, we prayed to crumbling rock and gravel walls for protection and piled up more layers of sandbags to push back the pressure. If a levee broke on one side, there was temporary relief on the other. Some farmers walked their lines with shotguns, threatening anyone who came near their sandbags. The fight was fair at first, until it wasn't, until it came to sacrificing others to save yourself, until those with power didn't want to protect those without. And maybe that's why I left. But by then, the Mississippi had taken more than 600 miles and much of our lives in its wake. 10 years ago, even as I was falling for Sammy, on that steamy July night, parked at Lover's Leap, one of my feet was firmly planted on the ground, even as I hiked the other to welcome him. The river is to blame. When you grow up on the banks in Hannibal, Missouri, you need an escape route. You never know when the water is going to rise, and you have to run.
Melissa Scholes Young reading from her debut novel, Flood. She's going to be reading from her book in Asheville at Malaprop's Bookstore on Thursday, August 3rd. And as always, we have that information on our website, stateofthings.org. Flood is the title of your book, and that plays an important part, certainly, in this. And you, in that passage, you talked about levees being, you know, sort of good news if you're behind the levee, and if you're on the other side of that, not so much, or upstream. That also plays an important part in this book, and in Hannibal, in fact. Hannibal was a town that protected itself with levees, right? Mm-hmm.
It is. In 1993... just before the big flood, we decided to put in pretty significant flood walls that actually protected the historic district, and that saved the downtown. But of course, water has to go somewhere. So when you protect yourself, it means that you're sending water downstream or to low-lying areas where people who can't afford flood walls end up living.
Those are some of the themes that were certainly important to Mark Twain as he examined what was going on in the golden age of American, the Gilded Age, mm-hmm. as he is the book that he co-authored. But he's very concerned, it seems to me, about these disparities and obviously some of the racial tensions that were created as a result of all of this. And I wonder, it is fascinating to think about going back to the place where he grew up and examine some of those. Was that some of what you had in mind, examining some of those themes mm-hmm. as you wrote this book?
I think Mark Twain's a humanitarian, and I think I was raised with literature that embedded that in me as well. And he, I think, as I'm doing in Flood, simply shines a light yeah. on a lot of those structures, institutions that keep people in their place. Mm. And I really do mean to examine the structures of poverty and of racism that still very much exist everywhere in our country.
Was that, and again, being from Hannibal, do you feel like you would have had to leave it to write this book? Could you have written this book if you had stayed?
I want to think I could have, yeah. but I don't know. That's a good question. I grew up with so much of Tom and Becky in our town, and yet I realized as an adult that there wasn't as much Huck, and there certainly wasn't as much Jim. And I wanted to know that story, too. A few years ago in Hannibal, just a few years ago, a new museum called Jim's Journey, the Huck Finn Freedom Center, just opened. And it's pretty recent that really we are starting to examine the complexity, right, of Jim's story and not just the history of slavery, but the pride in Black accomplishments in our town and what that means in Hannibal.
Tell us more about Laura. You talked about the fact that she didn't get quite the welcome that she was expecting. Talk about that welcome and then how her ideas about her hometown changed after she returned.
I think when she first comes home, she does a bit of hiding because she's not quite certain. She felt, I think, that it was a bit of going backwards in the wrong way to come back home. And she really thought they would all just welcome her back. And it's complicated, right? Mm-hmm. It's always complicated going home. And you do need to go home again. But her perspective has to shift from appreciating her hometown and loving it rather than simply seeing it through one very, very narrow lens.
Yeah, it does take time to realize that the folks who stay don't always appreciate the folks who leave, because you've made a comment on us. So we're not so open arms when you come back.
Right.
And she's having to come to terms with that. Now, you also left Hannibal at the age of 17 years old.
I did. I went to college, studied history, and became a teacher.
And how did that your ideas of home change, and what happens to you when you go home?
I'm not Laura Brooks, meaning that I have a family that welcomes me very much, but a family that travels as well. And I've certainly had more support, more opportunities than Laura Brooks has had. But I've moved a great deal. And so I find myself, like Mark Twain, very, very untethered. My definition of home is more complicated, I think, than hers.
And that's the thing. And I think for a writer, maybe we'll start talking about the craft of writing a book like this when it is so close to home, and Mark Twain absolutely rooted in that Mississippi River and in that culture. And yet, you know, his finest novel, Huck Finn, is written through the voice of an orphan. I mean, it is precisely because Huck is so detached and not part of this, and it has no parentage that's connected, that we get the cold-eyed, agnostic look at a system that is ruthless. And I wonder to what extent you found yourself having to do that, having to detach yourself from the place in order to get the novel to speak.
Our job as writers is actually, I think, to dig in more and pay more attention and go much beyond our own experiences, but to be able to see things so clearly through others' eyes. That's actually, I think, our job. And so paying attention helps write books. Huck is the village pariah. He's unwelcome, and he is embarrassing because he reveals what is he reveals what is unsettling about the town, and I think that's where we need lights to be shown even more.
But again, Huck is detached. He has no choice, you know. But Mark Twain, you know, Samuel Langhorne Clemens was. And so that, and as you described, that art of both paying attention, deep attention, deeper and deeper attention, and yet writing as though you're detached.
But Huck's actually the one at the end when he says, "All right, I'll go to hell."
Yeah.
He makes the moral choice that is socially unacceptable.
Right. Can I get you to read again?
Sure. I'm going to read to you from the middle of the book, because this is, I think, what reveals so much of the downtown. I cut through the parking lot down Main Street near the Becky Thatcher bookstore, where Sammy probably bought my books. Of course, the fictional St. Petersburg was only a porch of this place, but it's a myth that has lasted. It's the picture of Hannibal, of America's hometown, that we've built a tourist industry around. Some of the myth serves us well. Tourists come for the story and soak up the charm. We all know the tales. Tom and Becky on the river, Tom and Becky in the cave, Huck and Jim on the run. As kids, we ran in the cemetery and played a game called Muff Potter Tag as we raced each other to the top of Cardiff Hill. In the bookstore window, a Tom Sawyer Day schedule is displayed next to boxes of Huck Finn's wooden whistles, bags of glass marbles, and Becky Thatcher paper dolls. On the second floor are the original room where Laura Hawkins, Samuel Clemens' first love, who helped him imagine Becky, grew up. For a quarter, you can listen to a recording that illustrates how Laura spent her days reading, practicing piano, and helping her mother make a home. Mannequins wear bonnets and calico dresses inside the staged rooms, and their lips are perpetually pink. A brick courtyard separates the bookstore from the Mark Twain boyhood home. You can imagine a young Sam running between the houses, trying to get a glimpse of Laura. A replica of the very fence he wrote about whitewashing waits with a bucket and a brush and a plaque. Here stood the board fence which Tom Sawyer persuaded his gang to pay him for the privilege of whitewashing. Tom sat by and saw that it was done well. In the first floor museum window and a group photo of Tom and Becky contestants, I searched the faces for Bobby. He's off to the side, not leaning in like the rest, caught mid-laugh. I cross the street and walk under the lights coming from the Java Jive coffee house next door to Ayers Pottery. The night air is humid, but it feels less sticky than the stale bar smoke. In the window are homemade dishes and bowls. They've hung up a buy local sign and crossed out the word Walmart. Maybe I'll get Mama her very own piece of Hannibal pottery for her birthday. She'd love something pretty to put in the center of the kitchen table now that the ashtray is gone. Downtown used to be dark after 5. The store owners didn't stay open late once the tourists went to dinner and back to their hotels. Jazz music trickles out from a new store, the Wine Stop, where twinkling white lights from well-dressed couples inside, sipping glasses of summer whites. Families fill the benches outside Becky's old-fashioned ice cream parlor and emporium. Folks are lined up pretending to paint Tom's fence and taking pictures of our quaint little way of life. Most of it's true, and some of it isn't. Huck would fit in even less now. He was never this civilized, never behaved the way the town wanted him to. His poverty and neglect were embarrassing, so they shamed him and banished him to the outskirts of town, where the visitors never visit. Jim doesn't have a place at all, not yet anyway. If Hannibal had a slave history, you wouldn't know it by these streets.
Melissa Scholes Young, reading from her debut novel, Flood. She'll be at Malaprop's bookstore in Asheville on Thursday.
I should add Charlotte Park. Park Road Books in Charlotte on Friday.
On Friday in Charlotte. Okay, very good. Good. We'll add that as well to our website, stateofthings.org. Huck may not fit anymore, but the kind of grinding poverty that Huck and his family found him in is something that you expose in this book as well. The number of people self-medicating, meth labs, et cetera, that is now becoming a part of rural America, certainly.
It's certainly part of rural America. It's certainly part of our entire country.
Yeah.
And I think those structures that make that an attractive out are a real problem in our country.
A dominant story in this tale is Sammy McGuire, the farmer who was once the man Laura thought she would marry. Tell us about his role in this story.
Well, so part of what I love so much about Tom Sawyer is that Becky Thatcher never really becomes a fully developed character, right? You only see her through Tom's adoring eyes. Sammy McGuire, you only see through Laura's idealized eyes, right? That if you could go back and do it over again, would you change things? And so he as a character, I think, is a very, very positive part of the story. But it's always complicated, right, to look back.
And to some extent, you know, she does help him to some degree, help Laura kind of come to a deeper understanding of who she is and her relationship to that town, right?
Certainly, because without giving away anything from the ending, she has told herself a story about why their relationship ended. And why it was so necessary for her to run away, that there was a thing he did that was completely unforgivable. And so part of her returning home is going back to that story and finding out if it's true or not.
What's next for you? Are you going to stay in Hannibal now and stay in Missouri, or are you working on other ideas?
I'm working on a new book called Bug Girl, and it's a rural pest. It's set in a rural community also, but it's the story of four sisters in a family business, a pest control business. It's sort of like Little Women with bugs.
Little Women with bugs. I wonder what, you know, it was interesting to meet it, and I wonder if this is any part of your process in writing Flood, your current novel, that try to imagine Mark Twain today trying to examine him. What would that novel look like as he examines many of the problems that had gone unaddressed or, you know, in many ways have gotten worse since the time that he wrote, sort of how he might go back to Hannibal and write that story?
He would be very happy for us to still, of course, be talking about it. I think he'd be very pleased with this book. There was a reason he's still releasing books, and his autobiography just came out a few years ago, and there's more to come. Mark Twain wanted us to continue to talk about him, so I think he'd be happy to go back. And I think he would be pleased in so many of the ways that Hannibal has remained a tight community. There's tradition, there's familiarity, there's comfort. And I think he would start to be proud of some of the ways it is addressing, as a community, some of the problems. But there's a lot more work to do for all of us.
Melissa Scholes Young is the author of her debut novel, Flood, also a professor in the college writing program at the Department of Literature at American University. Melissa, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Frank.
Melissa's going to be reading from her book in Asheville at Malaprop's Bookstore on Thursday, and you're going to be
on Friday.
Park Road Books in Charlotte on Friday, and we'll put that up at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, dusting off old baseball memories, Eastern North Carolina's short-lived Tobacco State League. You'll hear about it on the State of Things. Please stay tuned.